Nick DiGilio here. I'm the voice of Chicago 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studios. We are here till 2 a.m. tonight, short show. And I've got tomorrow night off, by the way. I will not be here on Saturday night because I have a whole bunch of duties to fulfill at the Flashback Horror Convention, which is happening through Sunday at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Rosemont. I'll give you some more information about that in details a little bit later on. So I'm taking the night off tomorrow, or I should say later on tonight, Saturday night. Normally we're on from 6 to midnight on Saturday, but I got the night off for the Flashback Convention. I usually take the night off every year for the convention. And so, but I will be filling in, by the way, for Bill Leff all of next week. So Sunday night into Monday morning, I'll be back on the air. So I got Saturday night off, but I'll be back Sunday night at 1 a.m. into Monday morning. And I'll be filling in all week, except for Tuesday. Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, I will not be filling in because I will be hosting my film club screening of Sideways. And so I'm just going to take the night off that night to do the film club screening of Sideways. Colin and Eric are back for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Either of you guys going to come on Tuesday?
Going to try to.
I wish I could.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Get there early. Get loaded. So, all right, Colin and I have to give our review of We're the Millers. We're the Millers, the new comedy with Jason Sudeikis, Jennifer Aniston, Emma Roberts, Nick Offerman, and many more people. Eric liked it, thought it was funny. Colin, what did you think?
Well, like Eric said, you know, usually measure comedies based on how often you laugh. And that can often take precedence over all the, you know, flaws the movie has. Wish I could say I laughed as much as Eric did, but I just didn't. This movie just didn't do it for me. I thought a lot of the situations were just, you know, not very clever. And a lot of the jokes, I kind of just saw them all coming miles away often. You know, by the, you know, towards the end of the movie, I was just kind of ready for it to be over, but it just seemed to drag on and on and on, just sort of exasperating, you know, all these, you know, jokes that I'd kind of gotten tired of, you know, and but just kind of keep hammering them. I don't know. I just, I mean, I like the cast. It's got a you know, a good, charming cast that I'd like to see them, you know, in better, you know, work with better material. You know, at the end of the day, like, you know, it just didn't make me laugh. So, can't really recommend it.
I'm with Colin on this one. This movie should have been a lot funnier than it was, considering a lot of the talent that's involved. And I mean, the last time that Jason Sudeikis and Jennifer Aniston were in a movie, it's now one of those movies that I watch every single time it's on cable. The Horrible Bosses. I watch that thing every single time it's on cable, and I laugh my ass off every time. I was disappointed by this. And it's not for lack of having funny people in it. There are a lot of funny people in it. There are some situations where, you know, I laughed here and there, but overall I was pretty underwhelmed by it and was hoping it would be funnier. And, you know, and I really, really like, you know, Jason Sudeikis, and I really, obviously, I love Nick Offerman. I like Ed Helms, you know, Louis Guzman. There's a lot of very funny people in this movie, but I just don't think they're given much to do. So it wasn't, I can't recommend it either. So there you go. All right. Let us move on to, let's see, let's go to, Colin, why don't you tell us about Elysium?
All right. Well, this is a futuristic thriller from Neil Blomquist, the director of District 9. And this is a film that has a similar look and feel to that film. The setup is that the planet's richest people have set up shop in a remote space station so they can maintain their way of life, which I guess means they can sit around and swim in their pools and play golf some more. I don't know. But anyway, Matt Damon plays an average working stiff back on Earth, our planet is a horrific, you know, futuristic wasteland, not unlike what you see in the shanty towns in District 9. You know, it's got robots and, you know, poverty and horrible healthcare. And anyway, Matt Damon makes some off-color, sarcastic remarks when being questioned by authorities, and that starts a string of events where basically, long story short, he has 5 days to live. The only thing that can save him is on the Elysium, which is the name of the space station. And he gets recruited by an underground team of people who have made several attempts to get past the security to try and get onto Elysium, but have been shot down by their military, thanks to the leader, played by Jodie Foster. William Fichtner plays a high-ranking official who, you know, has the secrets to Elysium that Matt Damon has to try and get in order to save himself and to save the world and you know, help everyone be equal. So this is a movie that, like District 9, has a lot on its mind in terms of, you know, current events and, you know, mainly immigration, you know, the 99%, and stuff like that. And it kind of makes its intentions pretty well known from the start. Back in April, when Nick and I did the summer preview, somebody called and asked, what's the sort of smart science fiction movie that's going to be coming out this summer? What's this summer's Inception or whatever? And I think we both guessed Elysium would be, and I wish I could say that was true, but this movie kind of wears its intentions pretty, you know, clear, you know, wears it on its sleeve. So you're not really thinking about anything except the movie's, you know, pretty obvious messages about healthcare and immigration and, you know, the rich and the poor. I kind of just sat there thinking, who the hell is paying for this space station? Not, you know, just look at this thing like, there aren't enough billionaires in the world to conceive of something like this, let alone, you know, carry it through. All right, whatever, I can buy it into a science fiction, you know, parable. But there's just not enough, you know, interesting characters, you know, to make it, you know, Matt Damon's supposed to be our, you know, sort of our through line into the story, but he's not very interesting. Jodie Foster apparently has the same dialect coach that Jaden Smith has, and I gotta say, I hate to say it, but she's terrible in this movie. It's a really kind of embarrassing performance in this thing. So this is kind of a big fail on everybody's part. There's a lot of talent involved in this, and I was really looking forward to it because I just went back and watched District 9 and was kind of blown away by it all over again. So, yeah, I cannot recommend Elysium.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, I can't recommend it either. I found this movie incredibly disappointing. And it was, you've seen the trailer back, you know, back when it first premiered. You know, it seemed like that, you know, the Blomkamp might have been, you know, treading a lot of the same water with a lot of the stuff that Colin mentioned, that the, you know, the sort of the dynamic on Earth is pretty much, you know, what we saw in the shanty towns of District 9, except there was a lot more going on in District 9 with the ideas of immigration and sort of the through character that Sheridan Copley played in that film, and the sort of the turnaround and the sort of the bizarre, you know, experience that he goes through. There's a lot more humanity attached to that movie, and that's a big thing that's lacking here. I would have liked to have known a little bit more about Elysium. You know, it seems like the rich people just kind of sit around, drink martinis, have, you know, pool parties, and then every once in a while cure themselves of cancer. And the movie spends way too much time on Earth. And with the stuff that's going on, the action sequences in the film are not that inspired. I think with District 9, we had the sort of the luxury, if you will, of this sort of this first-time director doing some wondrous things with a very limited budget, particularly the alien special effects. And here he doesn't, you know, he's just kind of, you know, treading the exact same water, as I said. And so by the time we get up to Elysium, you know, all I'm thinking about is, one, how bad Jodie Foster in this movie, how shockingly bad she is in this movie, maybe her worst performance of her career, and just how incredibly bad the security system is for Elysium, that the space station will require has such little security that it requires the Secretary of Defense to call down on Earth to catch one guy who may be on his lunch break to shoot a bazooka at some people and take down, you know, impending ships like they're trying to escape the Hoth planet. from Empire Strikes Back. And then, again, then that's, and there's more stuff that happens towards the end that, you know, reinforces that. I was incredibly disappointed with this. I was a little bit bored at times. The action sequences didn't do anything for me. Matt Damon does, you know, as good as he can with that, with the everyman stuff. He's always watchable. Copley is the bad guy. It's just kind of over the top and not really that interesting. He's just kind of another dirty piece of the landscape that he just kind of blends in with everything else. So, no, I'm not recommending this film at all.
Yeah, I'm with you guys entirely. This is one of the biggest disappointments of the summer, no question about it. And I love District 9. I think we can all agree upon that. District 9 is an absolutely terrific movie. But, yeah, this is a retread of the same kind of thing, and it's really heavy-handed. Really, really heavy-handed, and you're right. The action sequences and the special effects sequences in District 9 were really, you know, unusual and brilliant and well thought out. And as you said, Eric, the achievement that Blomkamp made with the budget that he had on District 9 is astounding. If you go back and watch that movie again, I mean, it looks like the budget was triple than the what it was. He did a beautiful job with that. And here it's like he's got a lot more money but a lot less imagination. And yeah, I don't know what the hell Jodie Foster's doing. And you guys know how much I love Jodie Foster. She's one of my favorite people on the planet. And I love her. I love her in everything, even movies that I don't like, I love her in. She's terrible in this movie. I mean, just like, I mean, shockingly, you know, like, what the hell is she doing? I don't know. I don't know. I swear to God, I don't know what. I mean, if somebody had to see the dailies and go, wait a minute, is that Jodie Foster? Is that really Jodie Foster making those choices? And wow. So disappointing. I mean, that disappoints me whenever, you know, because I love Jodie Foster and anything that she's in, I will see. And, you know, 95% of the time she's terrific in movies. And that was another level of disappointment that this movie threw on me because I love Jodie Foster so much. It was like not only was this disappointing, not only were the ideas heavy-handed, not only was it less than exciting, and, you know, it was kind of repeating the same thing that he did in the first film. But then you add another level to it. One of my favorite actresses ever gives a really horrible performance. So, let me just say this. I would never have said, if you would talk to me back in April or whenever, come, you know, at this time when this movie was released, if I would have ever thought that I was going to say sincerely, I prefer Oblivion over this movie, I would say, no, I must be nuts. But I like Oblivion more than I like this movie.
That's what I said upon leaving the theater. I said, well, I kind of got to give Oblivion maybe a little extra credit.
That's what I'm saying, man. But, of course, my review of Oblivion was, you know, I mean, I ultimately gave it a positive review. But I don't know if you guys remember what the first sentence of my review was.
I remember you hated the first half of the movie.
Well, I said, if you can get past the first 80 minutes, it's pretty good.
There you go.
not the most ringing endorsement for a movie,
no. But
still better than this one. Real disappointment. I mean, a major, major, major disappointment. Elysium, none of us can recommend it. Okay, we got one more movie to talk about, and it's going to be an interesting conversation, I think. The movie is called The Spectacular Now, and Colin and Eric and I will review it. And if you want to jump in here, again, last chance here. If you want to jump in, we are looking for people who went to go see Planes. If you saw the new Disney movie Planes, which we did not get a chance to see, you took your kids to it. What did you think? What did they think? How does it compare to, you know, Cars or some of the other films? And again, the history of this movie is a little bit shady. It was supposed to go straight to DVD. Pixar did not really do this movie. It's a Disney thing. They're trying to connect it to the world of Pixar. It was supposed to go straight to DVD, and then suddenly it gets a theatrical release in full 3D in everything. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight movie reviews continue. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're trying to crack 8,700 fans on our Facebook page. And if you want to help us reach that plateau, just go to facebook.com/NickDShow and like us. All right. We've got one more movie to talk about. Colin and Eric join me. And all right, Eric, tell us about The Spectacular Now.
Okay. This is one of the big success stories from the Sundance Film Festival this year is where I saw it. It stars Miles Teller as Sutter, who is a high school student, one of the more popular high school students, who has the pretty girlfriend played by Brie Larson. He's definitely a party guy, definitely the guy that wants to be the most fun guy in the room. He does definitely likes to drink. And one day after one of several parties, he ends up passed out on the lawn of a fellow student played by Shailene Woodley, who is more of the good girl type. They meet and they strike up a little bit of a friendship. And eventually it leads to him basically sort of pursuing her as his relationship with his girlfriend is a little bit on the rocks. He begins pursuing her and believing that he can be a part of her life. She being a good girl, not the most popular girl in school, obviously sort of comes around to accept this relationship. She doesn't see anything shady about it. There are some each of them has a male and a female friend who are sort of guardedly pessimistic about this impending relationship. He sort of starts bringing her around to, sort of his ways. He buys her her own flask. It's not the most healthy of relationships. Certainly not for her. Maybe for him, because she can certainly, be the one that's going to turn him around in his life and sort of pursue the immediate future that he may have been denying himself. But this is a little bit more about him sort of corrupting this young girl, maybe even unintentionally. And that's sort of the path that this movie takes. There's stuff going on with his mom, a single mom played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. There's a scene late in the film involving his deadbeat dad played by Kyle Chandler, which is probably the best scene in the movie for me, even though I think that it's one of these scenes that tries to define the Sutter character a little bit more and to make you feel sympathy for him, and which is something that I didn't feel at all throughout this movie. To me, Nick, this is sort of how you felt during Silence of the Lambs, and that I felt that the Sutter character is sort of inflicting a sort of an emotional rape on this young girl. I think Shailene Woodley is the best thing about the movie. I felt for her character, though I didn't fall for this movie and what it was going for. I didn't have an emotional connection. I felt kind of angry throughout a lot of it, and trying to sort of, give sort of a purpose to what is essentially a real D-bag. I know people have defended and have tried defending him that he's not a D-bag. I'm sorry, I completely disagree, because I knew a lot of people that were like this growing up, and I'm sorry, but I have no sympathy for him, what he puts this girl through. I was not a big fan of James Ponsoldt's Smashed, and I was also not a big fan of this film either. Seems like every year now, me going to these festivals, there seems to be one or two movies that I am completely going against the grain on with everyone else, and it seems to be that this year is this one. Mm-hmm. So I do not recommend The Spectacular Now.
Okay. Colin, we're going to wait till after the news, okay?
Okay.
All right, everybody hang on. Colin and Eric are with me, and we've got to review The Spectacular Now. Eric had a very strong reaction to it. And we will give our reviews. Colin and Eric will give our reviews as well. And if you want to jump in here again, we've got some room here. We're going to take a few more minutes. By the way, CM Punk is coming up a little bit later on, in a few more minutes. After Drunks of the News, after Straight Out of Context, and after Nick D Spies, we will be joined by WWE superstar, the one, the only, Chicago and CM Punk. That's coming up right here on WGN. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard. Nick DeGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower, and we are wrapping up the midnight movie reviews. Eric and Colin are back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Eric just gave us the summary of the new film, The Spectacular Now, and gave us his review, a negative reaction to the film, in which, Eric, you basically hated the lead character.
Yep.
Okay. Colin, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, I love this movie. I don't know if I mean, this is a coming of age film, you know, that is not, you know, a rosy kind of a coming of age movie about first love or anything like that. You know, I love The Way, Way Back, but this one has a little more meat on its bones. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say emotional rape with this relationship. It's definitely unhealthy because, you know, this is a movie that, you know, in this situation, you know, this is a first love movie about the relationship. I think a lot of us have this in our past where, you know, you look back on a relationship and in the moment it was great. It felt great. It felt right. But when you look back on it, you realize it probably wasn't the healthiest relationship of my life. Probably shouldn't have, you know, been with that person as long as I was. And that's what this movie is about. It's about living in that moment and not really seeing everything around you that's, you know, that should be kind of a red flag, which I think is, you know, pretty typical for a high school relationship, which this is. And, you know, this is a movie about a guy who, you know, his whole philosophy of life is living in the moment, living in the spectacular now. And usually when, you know, people say stuff like that, they mean it as a great positive, as some, you know, sort of form of enlightenment. But this movie is really about the downside or the dangers of, you know, seeing life through that lens. And I think, you know, I don't agree with everything the character does either. I don't, you know, I'm not in sympathy with everything he does, but, it's a consistently written, well thought out character that, frankly, I don't really need to, you know, be in sympathy with every main character I see in a film. I just like them to be consistently written and, you know, I can understand what makes them tick. And I definitely got what makes this character tick. I think the performances are across the board fantastic. Eric mentioned a scene in a diner where, you know, the actor, what's the actor's name again? I'm sorry.
Who plays his dad?
No, who plays Sutter.
Miles Teller.
Yeah. There's a moment in that scene where I just like, okay, I'm officially a fan of this actor. I really wasn't before, but now I am. And Shailene Woodley, you know, what can you say about her? I think she's, you know, as good here as she was in, The Descendants, maybe even better. My one problem with the movie is the very final moment. I think it's a very indie film cliche that I'm kind of tired of. But me complaining about it is becoming my own cliche, so I'll stop. But it's nitpicking. I still think this is a really terrific film.
I loved it too, Eric. I'm sorry, man. I gotta say, I don't. You know, this character is the main character. I can totally understand why people would react the way you reacted, though, Eric. I totally understand that. There were times when some of the things he did were maddening, especially because Shailene Woodley's character is so unbelievably sweet. You know.
Yep.
And so nice, and you know, obviously he taught her how to stand up for herself a little bit, but in a really unhealthy way.
In a scene that doesn't exist in the movie, though. That scene is not in the movie.
No, it's not, but it was an obvious choice that her mother has never seen. Do you know what I mean? I think that was a stylistic choice. And you know, and everything was told through, you know, like just the reaction that she has to whatever happened between her and her mother. So that didn't bother me. The scene where he sees his dad finally, Kyle Chandler is phenomenal in this. And he's basically got one scene in the movie and he's great in it. And it's a scene that really, it's like, you know, I mean, you see everything that this character has been doing in the movie is on display, obviously, in the behavior of Kyle Chandler's character right there. And when this kid realizes this, and I think that's probably what the scene you're talking about, Colin.
Yeah.
I mean, when this kid realizes what's going on and how screwed up he really is, you know, it was incredibly powerful to me. It really, really was. And yeah, man, I mean, she goes through the Shailene Woodley character goes through some hell, man. the scene right after that when they're driving, I wouldn't give it away, but I almost fell out of my chair when it happened. I think there's a really wonderful scene between Jennifer Jason Leigh and Miles Teller at the end that I totally bought into. I was 100% into it. And hey, man, his geometry teacher is Bubbles from The Wire. So what the hell? No, I bought this movie hook, line, and sinker. I thought it was great. I was moved by it. I thought it was funny. I think the character, the main character, is a really complicated one, and I like that. I like that they didn't make him one dimensional, and easy to like. So yeah, I guess I'm in the majority on this one, Eric. You know, I thought it was. I think it's terrific. I think it might actually be one of the best movies of the year. So.
Oh God!
Sorry, man.
I don't know. I was hoping around for you, Nick. But oh, damn it!
I know. But again, Eric, I totally understand why you would react that way. I think this movie's about the character's redemption. That's what I think this movie's about. And sometimes when you're seeing movies, you know, where it's a pretty unlikable, this guy does some really crappy things to somebody. Sometimes it doesn't pay off. Sometimes you hate him so much that you don't even care whether this character gets redeemed or not. And that's your position. And that's a totally legitimate. That's a totally legitimate reaction to this movie.
Yeah, I've seen what happens between the two lead characters. I've seen that happen. Way too often in my own life.
Yeah.
And
I want to point out that this movie was written by the guys who wrote 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
And I'm with these guys, man.
Well, I love 500 Days of Summer.
That to me
is a more honest portrayal of a collapsing relationship than this one was, and it's mainly because, and it's true. I mean, it's hard for me to get past how much I hated the main character, and I saw this movie before I saw 21 and Over. So it's not like I was having some sort of some reaction to that. No, I saw this movie before that, and I hated this character, and I hated you know, even as good as that Kyle Chandler scene is, you know, I always have problems when, you know, someone's behavior is blamed on a parent.
Yeah.
You know, especially someone who's not been around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't buy that.
Okay. And by the way, I liked James Ponsold's I liked Smashed, and evidently he likes movies about codependency. So
yeah.
I guess that's his deal. So, all right, what do we got next week?
What we got? We got Kick-Ass 2 next week. We got Paranoia next week.
Yeah.
How great is that movie going to be?
Oh, man.
What else we got? Jobs with Ashton Kutcher next week. That's our lineup.
Okay, man. All right, you guys. Take it easy. Have a good night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. All right,
there you go. See you later. There's Eric. There's Colin. They review the movies with us every Friday night. You know what else happens every Friday night?
One bourbon, one Scott.
That's right. This is where we take all the true drunk stories of true drunk people being true and drunk. We read them all together. We vote on them. And we call it Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News. Sponsored by the Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet. We got to get moving here. So let's get ready to read some stories. Here we go. Drunk number one, drunk number one. By the house in blue. An Illinois man was arrested early Friday for public intoxication after admitting to the police, quote, "Of course I'm drunk. It's Thursday night in Iowa City." Alexander Kinzel, 21, of Lake Barrington, Illinois, was charged with public intoxication at 12:48 Friday. At Washington and Clinton Streets, according to Iowa City Police. Kinzel was identified by witnesses as a person who was involved in a fight in a nearby bar. He was not wearing a shirt. He had blood on his arms and face. He was at Bo James and was asked to leave by her staff and would not do so, according to the complaint. Kinzel became physical with the bar staff before being escorted out. He had a blood alcohol content of 0.248, three times the legal limit. He is listed as a student in the University of Iowa College of Liberal Arts and Sciences.
She ain't got nothing nice to say to me. But for 5 years, she was so nice.
Drunk number two. Drunk number two. Stealing a pair of pants apparently wasn't an option. A 19-year-old man is charged with stealing a Bobcat front loader from Hall's Landscaping Nursery on Sunday morning and drunkenly attempting to drive it home. The suspect, Joseph Michael Hall, had a perfectly good explanation for it, though. When authorities caught up to him rolling along the highway after 7 a.m., he was naked. Mr. Hall stated that he was drunk and he was trying to hide his nudity by taking the Bobcat. The Bobcat was taken from Out on a Limb Nursery. Authorities were alerted initially. A 911 caller reported that someone had smashed the bobcat through a chain link fence in the nursery and then driven away with it. Hall was arrested less than a mile away, a few blocks from his residence. The nursery owner called to the scene to retrieve the front loader. He wasn't immediately clear of how the teen lost his clothes. He was being held on Sunday in the detention facility in lieu of $6,200 total bonds. As a look, man. And let's see. Drunk number three. Drunk number three. And drunk number three is going to be our friend Mickey. Do we have Mickey?
Hi, this is Mickey with Drunks in the News. A man who was so drunk he couldn't remember throwing books around the Bundaberg Library has been put on probation in order to do community service. Police Prosecutor Sergeant Barry Stevens told the Bundaberg Magistrates Court police were called to the Bundaberg Regional Library on December 13th at 5:40 p.m. because of a disturbance. They were told Matthew Walter Kidd, 29, had been throwing books around and chased a foreign tourist out of the library. Police found an intoxicated kid sitting on a bench in the library and saw him throw a handful of books and then fall on the floor. He was unable to stand up, and police helped him to his feet, but he struggled with them and fell over again while abusing them. Kid pleaded guilty to public nuisance. Magistrate Deb Vasta told Kid his actions would have been very scary for young children in the library. She put him on probation for 12 months and ordered him to do 40 hours community service. Once again, this is Mickey Reshanes with Drunks in the News, signing off.
All right, we got a vote. Let's do this. We got the drunk guy who was naked who took some construction equipment. We got the drunk who was throwing books around. And the man who said, of course I'm drunk. I'm in Iowa. All right, Craig?
It's the of course I'm drunk guy.
Okay, and is George there?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm voting for the of course I'm drunk guy. So there you go. That's the winner. Here we go. Same bat time, same bat channel next week for Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We are going to do Out of Context and Nick D Spies and save them for next week because when we come back, it's time for CM Punk to join us.
When you shop for shoes, what do you look for, style or comfort? You always find both at Waxburg's Walk Shop in Niles. Now is the time to visit the folks at Waxburg's during their sizzling summer sale. Buy one pair of shoes or sandals and get the second pair of equal or lesser value at 40% off. Great savings, great style, and great comfort. Choose from thousands of hot weather styles. You'll love Waxburg staff, too. No rummaging through boxes on shelves. The professionals at Waxburg's, including three podorthists, take time to listen and help guide you to the perfect shoes for your feet. You sit and they fit. For over 90 years, Waxburg's has been fitting Chicagoland with the world's most comfortable footwear in sensational styles. From narrows to extra wides, Waxburg's has your size. Right now, the sizzling summer sale at Waxburg's is where you'll get the styles you want, the comfort you need, and you'll save 40% on every second pair. Waxburg's in Niles at 7013 West Dempster between Harlem and Waukegan Road. To learn more, visit waxburgs.com or call 847-965-FEET.
What does it mean when you dream of fish? It could mean that you will become rich and powerful. For a woman to dream of simply seeing fish, it could mean that she will find a handsome and talented lover. What does it mean when you hear a radio commercial describing what the meaning of fish dreams are? It means that you should really go out and go buy some fish. Oak Park Natural Pet and Fish has some of the world's most exotic fish, saltwater fish, oriental goldfish, African cichlids, and all of those fish are dreaming that you should take them home. Plus aquatic plants too. But no one knows what that means when you dream of those. Oak Park Natural Pet and Fish, north of the Eisenhower on Harlem. And by the way, fish have never dreamt of drowning.
20% off all fresh and saltwater fish. Sashay in now. Sale ends Sunday.
Nick DiGilio here, and we are on WGN, and I would like to welcome to the show... WWE superstar and Chicagoan, and just a great great worker all the way around, one of the best in the business right now, Mr. CM Punk. Let's welcome CM Punk to the show. Punk, welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. How often do you get back home, man?
You know, not often enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's few and far between. But what really sucks about it is it's not so much being away from home. It's when I'm home and I have to leave. Like, leaving Chicago is an extremely hard thing to do.
Yeah. I saw you at a couple of Hawks games. What a season that was, huh?
Yes. Yes, I'm excited for the upcoming season. I'm almost counting the days until October.
Cool, man. Hey, I wanted to mention that you're actually going to be part of Woody's Wiffle Ball Classic tomorrow. You excited about that? You a big wiffle ball guy?
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I played wiffle ball, but that doesn't mean it's not going to be entertaining. You know, yeah, I'm very, very excited for this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can still, tickets are still available. They're $15 for adults, $8 for children. And you can get them online. It starts tomorrow at Wrigley Field. Now have you thrown out the first pitch at Wrigley Field, right?
Yeah, more than once.
Yeah, that must be fun, huh?
No, it's a blast. Total blast. I've been fortunate enough to throw pitches in a lot of different places. But Wrigley, you know, way more pressure at Wrigley Field.
Yeah. How did you get into the wrestling business, Punk?
I guess I stumbled into it just kind of like everybody else did. I didn't really have like an outlet for anything. You know, there wasn't a UFC, there wasn't MMA, and I would goof around and wrestle around in backyards and stuff with my friends, but like I actually wanted to be a wrestler, so I just started wrestling. You know, I didn't know that you had to go to school and learn how to do stuff, kind of like any trade, like, you know, being a carpenter or an electrician.
Sure.
Eventually, I stumbled upon a place in Chicago right off of Irving Park Road called the Steel Domain, and I went there. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history.
I got to say, I want to mention, you know, first of all, we got a Raw coming up here in Chicago September 23rd. And I'm hoping you are going to be on the card, right?
I'm sure I'll be there.
Yeah, good. Because I'm telling you, I went to Payback, and the pop that you got when you came in, man, I thought the ceiling was going to fall in. That's got to feel great, right?
You know, I think it's an interesting dynamic. You know, I don't know of any other person who in their hometown gets such a reaction, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost too easy. It's a gimme, you know what I mean? When I come to Chicago, and yeah, that's a great feeling, you know what I mean? Like, I love this city so much, and we go to the Allstate Arena, and the entire place, you know, even hours before the show, is chanting my name. It's wild, and it always brings me back and makes me remember where I came from, and it kind of humbles me, but it fires me up too. It's pretty cool.
It was a hell of a match you guys had, you and Jericho. It was a great match, one of the best of the night, no question about it.
Thank you.
It was great to have you back, man. You know, you were missed, so
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I got to talk about, and I'm sure that any wrestling fan who interviews you mentions the promo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, man. I've been a wrestling fan my whole life. I watch Raw, you know, and I watch SmackDown every week. Even watch TNA. And
oh, bless your heart.
Yeah. So I got to say, I was watching Raw that night when you cut that promo, and I thought my brain was going to explode. I immediately called one of my friends who's a big wrestling fan. I said, did we just witness a shoot? Was that a shoot? What was the deal behind that promo, Punk? And how was it planned? And I mean, I'm telling you, it's legendary. One of the best promos in the history of wrestling.
Man. You know, honestly, it was just however many years I'd been in the WWE up until that point, like six or five, I can't even remember, 2005, and that happened in 11, so 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It was just years and years and years of frustration, you know. So, I mean, it was easy for me to do. I was pissed off.
Yeah.
You know? I was an angry young man, and it just... I was given a platform to just express how angry I was because I was quitting and I was leaving, you know?
Yeah.
And I must have said something to somebody backstage, you know, and they were just like, wow, he should just say that on TV, you know?
Yeah.
And of course there's some things they didn't want me to say, but I went ahead and said them anyway, you know, because I had free reign. And, Yeah, you in a way you did witness a shoot. You know what I mean? It's just that. I mean, that was just as real as it could.
And how much of it did you run past Vince before you got out there?
Well, not to peel back too much from the curtain,
so to speak,
but obviously you're a fan, and I'm pretty sure if anybody's listening to this, they're probably huge fans, and you know everything anyway, and mm-hmm. I didn't have to write that promo, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that was all straight from the heart. So what I did is I wrote one that I knew he would okay. I knew he would never let me say Paul Heyman. He would never let me say Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
There were certain things that I knew, just based off of experience going into it, that he would never let me say. So instead of asking for permission, I just figured, well, I'm either going to get fired or it's easier just for me to just be like, oh, dip, sorry, whatever.
Yeah.
And, in general, I know one of the golden rules, at least it always has been with me, is I don't think anybody's ever really going to care what you do or who you offend or what line you cross, as long as whatever you do is really, really good TV.
Yeah.
So I knew I was going to be all right. So I wrote one I knew he would approve, and I handed it to him, and then he was like, yeah, great, let's do all that, that's fine. And then I just went out there. And sort of did whatever I wanted.
Yeah. Well, it was, like I said, man, one of the best promos in the history of wrestling. And to this day, I mean, just absolutely amazing. What was the response afterwards? Like, after you cut that promo, what did the guys in the back say? What was going on?
Well, I went side ramp, so I didn't go straight through the curtain. So I went to the side, and when I got in back, everybody was huddled around the curtain waiting for me to, like, come down the stairs. And I was just kind of, like, standing there. And I'm talking, like, everybody from, cameramen backstage to sound personnel to, production people, and everybody was just looking at me like I had two heads and one of them was glowing, It was kind of a weird thing. And then I remember the first person to say anything to me was Chris Masters. He turned around and he looked at me and he went, did you just hear that promo Punk cut? And I just like looked at him like, are you, and he just looked at me and he realized, oh, it's you. He was like, F-bombs aplenty, and everyone was confused and everyone thought I was going to get fired, and it was chaos. Nobody knew what was going on.
Wow.
It was a good scene. A lot of people immediately came up to me and they're like, we're going to pitch in. If you get fined, we're going to pay for it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, it was great. And then that following, that pay-per-view here in Chicago when you got the belt, man, that was unbelievable as well. Was that one of the highlights for you, your career?
I mean, easily, I think it has to be, yeah.
Yeah,
I can't say a bad thing about that night.
Yeah, it was great, and you just took off. It was so cool. It was great. Hey, I saw you last night at Mick Foley's thing.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah. Didn't he do a good job? Wasn't that funny?
He does a very good job, yeah. I'd never gotten to see Mick do his stand-up thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't, I didn't know what to expect, and I was pleasantly surprised. Not that I thought Mick was going to do a horrible job, it's just, I think that does – it takes some balls to kind of throw yourself out of your comfort zone and stand up there and do that. And he did a great job.
He did do a great job and told some really, really great stories. It was just – it was a lot of fun. So you're also at the Comic-Con this weekend.
Yes.
That's got to be fun. I know you're a huge comic book fan.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be a busy day.
Yeah, I bet, man. You got the Wiffle Ball Classic tomorrow, and you're going to be over at Comic-Con. And people can get, like, autographs and photos and stuff with you at Comic-Con?
Yeah, Comic-Con tomorrow I'm doing a big, like, a question and answer panel thing, which is always a lot of fun. And mm-hmm. I always bring surprises and treats for the fans. And then, pictures, autographs, all kinds of stuff.
That's cool. And the Wiffle Ball Classic is also tomorrow at Wrigley Field. And CM Punk is going to be one of many, many celebrities that are going to be appearing at the Wiffle Ball Classic, and then you can check them out at Comic-Con. I'm actually across the street at the Flashback Horror Convention this weekend.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that was going on.
Yeah, it's happening like right across the street at the Crown Plaza Hotel. I'm one of the hosts there, and we've got all kinds of, like George Romero, all the Dawn of the Dead people are there. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
It's a great weekend for geeks up there in Rosemont.
It's, It's a great time to be alive and be a geek, absolutely.
Yeah, no question about it. So, listen, I want to thank you for taking the time, man. I've been a huge fan for forever, and are you happy with the angle you guys are working now with you and Lesnar and Heyman?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Brock's a guy that isn't going to complain about things, you know. You know, he hits too hard or, you know, anything, and he's already busted me open. Heyman's busted me open. Like, yeah, it's going to be chaos at SummerSlam, and that's the way I like it.
SummerSlam is that's the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, right, after Mania?
I think internally they like to say that, but, you know, there's always the debate of whether it's the Rumble or SummerSlam, but I think SummerSlam's in the lead right now.
Yeah, okay. Listen, Punk, welcome home, man. Have a good time while you're here, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us tonight, man.
No problem, man. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy, take care. There you go. CM Punk, the one, the only CM Punk.